Good morning. I'm Ann Schindler, and this is First Coast Connect. Today, a bill gutting local ethics investigations has advocates statewide pleading for the governor's veto. Two Jacksonville ethics champions join us to explain. Later in the program, superachiever Donna Orender joins us ahead of her Generation W event in April, and local artists celebrate the florabundance of native plants. But first, a bill ostensibly designed to toughen ethics rules in the state actually undermines local accountability. My two guests are now urging the governor to veto the measure, saying it will severely compromise the work of the Jacksonville Ethics Commission. I'm joined now by the chair of Jacksonville's Ethics Commission, J.J. Dixon. Good morning.
Good morning.
And City Councilmember Matt Carlucci and longtime ethics champion. Welcome, Matt.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. J.J. Dixon, the Jacksonville Ethics Commission sent an impassioned letter to the governor late Friday asking him to veto Senate Bill 7014. What makes this bill objectionable?
Well, first of all, the bill did not go through all of the normal procedural motions that we would normally see a bill go through. It was kind of fast-tracked, and all these last-minute amendments were made that would affect us local ethics offices. The one big thing problem that we have with it is that it will limit, almost restrict our ability to do investigations in terms of folks being able to anonymously report like they used to, or us as a commission being able to take information that we hear in, for example, news stories, or information that we get that we would normally take and run and investigate to see if there was any merit to it. It would preclude us from doing that at this point.
And so it would require an investigation to begin how?
Well, really, there would be no real investigation, in my opinion. The person that would file the complaint would have to have what they're calling personal knowledge of an allegation in order to make the complaint. And that would be how it would go.
Mm-hmm. Matt, how likely is it, or how difficult is it, for someone to have, quote, personal knowledge of an example of something that might be an ethics violation?
Pretty difficult. People in public office, appointed or elected, generally don't invite the public to watch them do their unethical events, their unethical behavior. It's done where they try to find a way to get it done so nobody knows. So unlike back prior to consolidation and other ethics investigations, if you heard a rumor and then you decided to go check it out through audits, council minutes, newspaper reports or whatever, and then you substantiate it, I don't think that counts as personal knowledge. I mean, it's like you have to see it with your own two eyes before you can report it. Now, the Florida Commission on Ethics will be the rulemaker on this. So they will define personal knowledge, but I'm just not sure how else you... I'm not sure how you define that, other than I would have to know Ann Schindler, because I saw you do it, did something unethical, or you saw me do something unethical with your own two eyes, then that's personal knowledge.
And so that's one component. But if you were going to, for instance, write a report on something you saw me do, not only would you have to have seen me do it, but you'd have to put your name to that complaint. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd have to swear to it and do an oath. Look, you know, the public doesn't like corruption. They like they like to take care of things in their normal productive lives, paying taxes, going to work. Well, they don't like paying taxes, but anyway, they pay their taxes, they go to work, they raise their kids, they go to church, they do all the things productive citizens do. They give to their community, and they don't want to be hassled when they see something wrong to have to swear to it, and then suddenly they're in the spotlight with public officials who can sometimes be pretty ruthless and vengeful towards people. So it's, but what the chair just said, that from our local ethics commission, who she's amazing, she's doing a great job, and the whole ethics commission locally here is doing a great job, is that they snuck it in. I'll just say it. They just snuck it in on the floor of the Senate and then on the floor of the House, the amendment to what was, in other words, there was an innocuous annual ethics bill that funds the Ethics Commission and so forth. But they snuck in amendments at the last minute.
Who did that?
The Senate and the House.
Who specifically?
Burgess, Senator Burgess in the Florida Senate. I can't remember exactly who did it in the House. But at the end of the day, they did it on the floor where nobody can have a say. They didn't go through any committee process. There were no advertised public hearings that this was going to be considered. They just put it in and just basically told the public, public be damned. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
We're talking about concerns over a new ethics law and an appeal to the governor to veto it. You can reach out if you have any questions or comments at 904-549-2937. You can also email firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And of course, you can reach out on social media. J.J. Dixon, what in terms of having somebody have to swear to a complaint, what does that mean when you're talking about somebody that maybe works in the city and sees something of concern to them, but they're an employee?
That's an issue. That's going to be an issue. My background is in law enforcement. I was in law enforcement for more than 25 years. And just handling regular police calls, getting people to make reports when they've been victimized is a challenge. So in terms of having you file a complaint against a public official, especially if it's in a workplace or something along those lines, it's going to be a real challenge. If it happens at all, I would imagine that we won't get very many of those kinds of complaints. And let me just say that here in Jacksonville with our Ethics Commission over the years, and I believe it's been since 2015, we've had about 95 complaints. Of those 95 complaints, 55 of those were made anonymously. Those were people who did not want, to put their names on the line. The Ethics Commission was empowered by the city of Jacksonville. The citizens, they voted. They gave the Ethics Commission the power to vet those kinds of complaints, which they've done. So of the 55 anonymous complaints that were made, there were only two that were actually followed through with, that were actually found to be sufficient enough to move forward in the process. So I give those numbers so that we understand that we don't have an Ethics Commission, at least here in Jacksonville, that's just out, running with anonymous complaints and harassing, public officials. The Jacksonville Ethics Commission actually does the job. They utilize the due process measures that are in place to make sure that those who are accused receive, the proper rights that they deserve as well. So I think it's going to be a real challenge to get people to put their name on the line.
And to be clear, the commission, when you do an investigation, it's not made public unless there's a finding, right? So it's if there's an investigation that's ongoing and you don't find anything, that information doesn't become public. That person's name isn't tarnished.
Correct. That's correct. That is correct. And just to add, remember that the commissioners who are assigned to the commission, they've all been referred by the state attorney's office, the public defender's office, the sheriff's office, the mayor's office. And you have professional individuals who are on the commission who make it up. And so, you have people who know about how to conduct investigations and what due process means and how to get down to the truth of a matter. And so it's really, I'm really impressed with what Jacksonville has done with their ethics commission in terms of being able to investigate complaints.
And you do have a law enforcement background. I mean, certainly when law enforcement is asking for tips from the community to solve a crime, there is an opportunity to leave an anonymous tip with Crime Stoppers or to leave an anonymous tip with the sheriff's office. And it doesn't mean that they don't use that information to try to pursue their investigation, but this would be very different.
Correct. Mm-hmm. That's true.
So, Matt, you served for 5 years as a member of the State Commission on Ethics, which is, as you said, kind of the controlling agency for these local commissions. But this bill, this state bill that's been approved and that you want the governor to veto, would basically hinder local government.
Well, it hinders local and the state. The state is independent of in and of itself, and all the local ethics commissions around the state and municipalities are independent upon themselves. Sometimes they mirror each other's, best practices and so forth. But let me just say this. There's one reason that Senator Burgess said that he filed the amendment is he didn't like public officials that were up for re-election, somebody to file a false complaint, and then that victimizes that person who's had a complaint filed on them and oftentimes has effects on the election. But there are ways that that can be controlled, and the way that some control it is complaints can't be filed 90 days prior to an election. But they didn't bother looking at that. And when I was on the State Ethics Commission, as it is now, malicious and false complaints generally never see the light of day because they're vetted by the executive director of the commission or the commission itself. And if it doesn't see the light of day, it's gone. Those who want to victimize it, though, will say, we filed a complaint with the Florida Commission on Ethics on such and such. Well, that can be controlled by not allowing that to happen for 90 days. So, you know, some people might say, well, is that constitutional? I am not a constitutional lawyer. I just happen to believe that it's better to have that than to shut the whole process down. And this one amendment actually kind of shuts the whole process of investigating down unless you happen to personally see somebody do something that was unethical.
JJ, this is a curious time to be having this discussion. Obviously, on the heels of a very important federal criminal corruption case that was resolved last week with a guilty verdict against the former head of JEA. Also last week, a former public defender, Matt Shirk, disbarred over, contempt charges at the Supreme Court level, but initially over ethics violations that were investigated by the State Ethics Commission. So how do you square, those kind of local instances of a need for an investigation into corruption with this push to gut the ability of your agency to do their work?
It's mind-boggling. You don't understand why, with the climate that we're living in right now, you just described two incidents, but there are many more than that, and not just in this area, but all over the state. It makes you wonder, why would anyone come up with amendments like these at a time like this, when what we really need is more oversight and not less? And if I could just piggyback off of what Mr. Carlucci was saying, I just wanted to add that in terms of that time period that he was referring to that could be implemented for, people not being able to file those complaints. We actually already have that here in Jacksonville. We implemented, there's a 30-day period where you can't file a complaint before an election. So we already have that in place.
She's right. She's right. And I think actually, Madam Chair, that's on the state. I should have pointed that out, but it might need to be extended out to 90 days because that is not a good thing to happen. But usually that's performed by unethical politicians trying to find political edge. So one other thing, this stops our local ethics commission can self-initiate investigations like the JEA, when then ethics director Carla Miller went to Atlanta to investigate how they were doing negotiations on selling the JEA. And had she not been there, which under this legislation she would not have been able to attend, then we don't know what would have happened with the JEA. There were so many key people at key times in stopping the sale in the privatization of JEA, and she was one of them because she had the ability, thanks to the local Jacksonville Commission on Ethics.
What, if any, reaction have you gotten from the governor in response to your request that he veto this? What's the timeline and what's your expectation?
The Ethics Commission has not gotten any feedback from him at this point, but in all fairness, we just submitted our letter on Friday, but we have not heard anything back mm-hmm. as of yet.
Upon receipt of the law, and so if it doesn't land on his desk or in his office for 2 weeks, let's say it lands in his office for 2 weeks, he's got 15 days to sign it or veto it. I suppose he might can let it go into law without a signature. Politically, I think it's great advantages for Governor DeSantis to sign it or to veto it. I think it would help broaden his base a bit to the average working citizens of Jacksonville that would expect something like that for him to veto.
Mm-hmm.
So politically, politics can be bad, but politics can be good too, because politics has to do with representing the public. So the politics of this would be good mm-hmm. if he were to veto it, and it would be good for him, and it'd be good for Florida. It would be good for our local chairman here.
Well, I've been speaking with Ethics Commission Chair J.J. Dixon and Jacksonville City Councilmember Matt Carlucci. Thank you both so much for coming here and talking about this today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Keep us posted. Up next, inspiring young women and girls to innovate and lead. Welcome back. My next guest's list of accomplishments is as long as it is impressive. Former president of the WNBA, senior vice president of the PGA Tour, motivational speaker, and founder of the annual leadership conference Generation W. Donna Orender, welcome to First Coast Connect.
It's so nice to be here this morning. Thank you so much.
It is so nice to have you. So I want to start with some of your earliest athletic accomplishments.
Wow. Okay.
It was clear pretty early on that you had a gift. So you were a five-sport athlete in high school. You lettered in
seven.
You lettered in basketball, field hockey, volleyball, softball, tennis. And then you did pro basketball for a number of years. You played with three different teams, including the Chicago Hustle, which I
did.
Has the greatest name.
Isn't that a great name? I know. We didn't have to dance before warm-up, so it's okay.
So how did competitive athletics prepare you for your eventual career?
I think I've spoken about this often, and I think about it in my business life. It prepared me totally. What youth, young boys and young girls, which is why I'm such an advocate for the growing movement behind women's sports, is it teaches us how to be persistent. It teaches us how to have discipline. It teaches us how to manage our time. It teaches us so much about ourselves. It puts us in a position where we really want to make ourselves better, but also be involved in a sphere where we're competing in things that are bigger than ourselves. Right? The values are just so invaluable.
Do you think it also helps with emotional regulation? Is it something that kids, use that to sort of focus?
Without a doubt. You have to learn how to win, but you also have to learn how to lose gracefully and graciously. Mm-hmm. And all those things play into the fact that if I want to perform my best, then I definitely have to have a handle on my emotions.
So you, in addition to working at the WNBA and the PGA Tour, you started your own company. You're the CEO of Orender Unlimited, which does consulting work, but you part of your work is this Generation W effort. So people may not all know about it, some will, but explain what Generation W is and does.
It's not a job. It's a mission. It's a life work. It's a passion. I think when I left the WNBA, I realized I was on the cutting edge of that wave of commerce and culture, which we're continuing to see evolve. And I wanted to bring something to my hometown. I was digging in here in Jacksonville, although I'd lived here for a long time, that wanted to contribute.
And I really felt that women's voices should be elevated, opportunities should be expanded. I felt it was in the collective best interest of building vital and vibrant communities. And so I said, what the heck? Let's try to build something around thought leadership. And at the time, honestly, this was like almost 15 years ago, Jacksonville and thought leadership was something that probably could have been enhanced.
And so what has happened in the years since?
Well, we're starting this is our 13th year for Generation W. We're now nationally recognized. People come from over 30 states to participate in this thought leadership event. I think my favorite moment of every week throughout the year when I run into especially women, but men are invited and they do come, when they tell me that their lives have been positively changed by the experience they have in being part of Generation W.
I'm talking to Donna Orender about her upcoming event, Generation W. It's in April, and she is available to answer your questions or your comments. You can give us a call at 904-549-2937, or you can email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Has the goal of Generation W changed in the years since it began?
Actually, I don't think it's really changed. It's just deepened and enhanced. This year, we started a program a couple of years ago called Launch Her. So we'll select four up-and-coming entrepreneurs and just provide them support. We don't charge them anything. We're there to give them publicity, social media support. We'll introduce them on the stage. We'll let them feature their products and sell them. We're really all about supporting women and girls. But honestly, our the spirit of it, when you elevate a woman and girl, you elevate us all. So really about elevating communities, making our workplaces better, right? More integrated in terms of how we see each other and how we're able to work. So this has been a true asset to all the companies that send people. It's about retention. It's about recruitment. It's about personal growth. It's about professional growth. It's about the power of connection and inspiration. And I think what I see on an ongoing basis, because in addition to Generation W, we have a program called Refresh, which is on every 2 weeks, although we're on a little bit of a hiatus right now. We do a thing called No Friends. We have our Gen Wow program. People want to be seen. They want to be heard. They want to be meaningfully connected. Mm-hmm.
And since a big part of what you do is trying to help people, you know, work and improve themselves and do so in a professional space, how do like political events or movements like Me Too impact the work that you do, the message that you send to women, or does it?
Well, we're a 501c3, and we really are embrace ideas and resonant topics that are happening. We're not a political organization in any way, but we're a trusted organization that can host, right, and have really great curated conversations about important topics. This year, our theme is Believe, and everybody's been rallying about that. And I wonder why. Every time I sit down, our theme is Believe. They go, great. Why? Why is it great? Because I think we're all really struggling with what do we believe in a society that has truth questioned everywhere we look? How do we believe about what do we believe about ourselves, and how important is that belief? What do we believe about other stories, and what is the importance of us sharing them? And the speakers that we attract who come are so extraordinary to share their stories in a way that people can hear and listen and feel comfortable. It's a beautiful thing.
Has the question, have the comments, have the inquiries changed though in like the last, 10 years in terms of people bringing their workplace experiences or wanting advice about how to conduct themselves in those spaces?
What a great question. I am surprisingly, and I actually talked about this at a group. I went up to New York for a mentor retreat. And the issues really are consistent. They may vary in how many there were, are there more, are there less? But I do think there are life cycle struggles that we all face as we grow up and move forward, mm-hmm. right? Women, there are issues about, we talk about it, what's balance? How do we take care of our kids? How do our workplaces recognize that? And yet there's been a lot of progress, but there are those issues that we all have in terms of our existence every day.
Mm-hmm. How about your own experience as you've grown older? Has your view changed? Has your perspective changed about what's important or the messages that you want to share with younger women?
I feel stronger about the messages. I don't know that they've substantially changed. I've always believed in the value of every single person. I believe we need to see and listen and reach out to each other. I know the power of connection, which is what started all of this, is more important than ever. I believe that hard work is good and builds character. And I just spoke at the University of Central Florida and all their graduate students, like, tell us what you see. And I said, what I see is, and is the, if you have a great attitude and you want to work, then people will see and you'll be able to advance. I don't know. There's no substitute for doing the work.
Mm-hmm. So this upcoming event here in Jacksonville, tell us a little bit about what the format is and what people who come should expect.
First of all, I'll start with the second question. People who come, some of them don't, have never seen it before, and so they are kind of blown away. There's no way of expressing the spirit, the energy, the inspiration that is collected in this space. It begins sharp at 8 o'clock in their seats. The energy is palpable. We have a surprise opening this year. We have, you know, the incredible conductor of the Jacksonville Symphony is going to come speak.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, excellent. We have the former chairman and CEO of United Airlines, Oscar Munoz, will be there. We have Dr. Vicky Medvec, who is a foremost recognized expert in negotiation out of the Northwestern Graduate School. She'll be there to talk about that. We have incredible workshops on leadership. The Mayo Clinic's going to do Answers for Cancer at a time, I think, when every person is touched by cancer in their life in some way. Where is the safe place we can ask questions from experts? Mm-hmm. This incredible woman, 30 years of research, who's an expert on instinct and persuasion. Think about that in the concept, in the context of believing, right? What is our instincts? How do we believe? How are our minds changed? 30 years of experience, she's going to do a workshop on that. I think it will be phenomenal. Dr. Lemayum from UNF. We've had so many talks, and one day he looked at me and I said, would you like to speak? He's an incredible thinker, communicator, and I'm really excited that he'll be joining us this year. I really do love when all of these people come from across the country, especially a lot of friends from New York, and they'll go, where did you find that person? Where did you find that person? And I love what I can say.
Here.
They're from Jacksonville. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And so do you give them kind of, is believe their talking point sort of, is that the thing that they're centering their discussion on? Or do you just sort of let them wing it and do their what they want?
We don't wing. We don't wing. We really think about the topics from a multitude of disciplines and areas. And actually, seeing that I'm on an NPR station, one of my favorite, most exciting panels is a thing called This I Believe.
Oh, yeah.
The concept was started in 1950s by Edward R. Murrow. And it's been taken to all different lengths, right? Einstein did one, and the hairdresser does one. And we have a panel consisting of our very own Pat Garrity from Florida Blue. Lori Lee's one of the senior most executives from AT&T is flying in. We have Patty McElroy from the president of Five Star Foundation, as well as a woman who's coming in from New York and very accomplished woman in finance at Goldman Sachs. They will be moderated by Dr. Olenda Johnson, who teaches leadership at the United States Naval War College. That conversation, I think, will be wonderful in so many ways because it not only opens up and shares stories, but it gets us to think about our story. And I think it will be early in the day, and it will, I think that thematic will run all the way through.
And I would guess that your guests are, I mean, it's an opportunity for them as well to think deeply and kind of reflect on where they are in their career and messages that they care to share.
I think the opportunity, I think what this day gives everybody is a chance to say, hit the pause button and say, wait a second, I just need this time for me. And if I take this time for me and then I see that this time is for we, it makes all of us better.
So who should attend this event? I mean, I always think of Gen W as kind of, you know, skewed young, but who do you think gains most?
Actually, it's funny. I get this a lot, especially talking to the companies that I do, like, who should we send? I truly believe in the intergenerational mix of people getting together. I love the fact that we have 100 students invited as our guests to attend from local universities and colleges. And I love the fact that we have senior women executives. We have up-and-coming rising stars. We have accomplished mid-tier executives. And we have women 60, 70, 80, and 90. I love when we had Helen Lane many, many years ago on the stage. And she got up and wanted to learn how to twerk. But there's something so engaging and connecting about that. You know what I mean? And so the unifying spirit that we all have about wanting to be our best selves, we want to learn what we can in an environment we feel safe, is universal. And therefore, having this incredible mix of community is really strengthening.
Are there any people who've come to the conference and left you with, you know, a story about how it's impacted them or in some way changed their approach to things?
So many. And it's not like they write me right away. And I'll give you one. JSK, there's a woman named Jen Kelman. I love her. I was speaking at a panel. She goes, Donna, you don't know this. I'm like, yes. Well, I came to your event and I realized I needed to start my own company. I was working here and here and I started my own company. And I said, what are you doing? She goes, I do marketing. I said, well, if you're doing marketing, we need help. Can we hire you? And she now works for us.
No kidding.
Another great story is Ida. Ida came. She sat there. She said, oh, my God, Donna, I was listening and I knew I had to do something for the community. She sat there, called up her husband, said, meet me. We're writing a business plan. And she now started one, but has expanded to four mental health community-centered focused locations here in Jacksonville.
And so if people are interested in expanding kind of their business and professional aspirations, obviously some opportunities there. But what about people who are just maybe interested in, you know, talking, meeting, connecting and networking with other women?
The energy is palpable. What people say is a lot of conferences you go to, people will look over your shoulder, see who's down there. People come with open hearts and open minds and they feel it. I have a girlfriend who comes from New York. She goes, I can go to any conference in the country. And I do, but I will never miss this one. Why not? She goes, because the spirit here is so exceptionally different and special, and I want to be a part of that.
A lot of attention happening right now with women's basketball.
Yes!
I'm just interested in how you've seen that sport evolve. If you're just surprised to see the attention that it's getting, just think that it's finally kind of getting its due.
First of all, let me just say how incredibly grateful I am. I mean, I feel like I've lived through every stage of this, you know, playing since I've been very young, playing in the first women's professional league ever, playing in, you know, college, to see what is happening now. Knowing that I have been in so many companies, boardrooms and sales, you know, conference rooms, and hearing the receptivity, the positivity, seeing the results in terms of ratings and interest, knowing that all of these men want to know what Caitlin Clark is doing before any other team. I take a pause sometimes like, why not before? Because there's so many gifted athletes that are still playing the WNBA clearly in college. And then I just say, it's happening. Let's go with it and build. And I think it's extraordinary.
Have you picked your bracket?
I have to because Tuesday, I think the play-in games are right now for the men. I will pick my bracket. I think it's a tough one. I think like everyone in America, I'll be rooting for, you know, Dawn Staley. I was with her. She was with me. I guess we were both at the WNBA. I'm a huge fan of hers. But this Caitlin Clark phenomenon is just phenomenal. And that, honestly, two-step from the logo three-pointer, I think she's got the lock on that.
For people who want to attend the event, it's in April. Tell us the details and how they can get a ticket.
Yeah, no, really simple. GenW.com is you just go to our website, you go to, and then it takes you into our Eventbrite site. You get breakfast, you get lunch, you get a post wine celebration, and you get to have your spirit, your heart, your mind opened and lifted. I think it's an incredible value. It's a really special day, and I will also say that I think it's a great thing for the city of Jacksonville. It puts us on the map with women leaders and companies across the country. And I'm really proud of the work that we continue to do and all who share in that work.
Well, Donna Orender, it's so nice to have you today. And thanks for being here. Good luck with the event.
And I'm expecting you there. Just want to let you know.
Thank you, Donna. Appreciate it. Up next, a Jacksonville native plant educator and graphic designer explores Florida's flora through art. Welcome back. The vernal equinox occurs this evening. Equinox? Making today the official first day of spring. For those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, it's a time of renewal for many and a time to refresh garden beds and landscaping. But not all flora thrives in our climate that does thrive here is necessarily good for our climate. I'm joined now by Florida Native Plant Society Director at Large, Adam Arendelle. Hey, Adam.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Let's talk about native plants, because this exhibit that you're coordinating of art is based on native plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're doing our first ever art show. It's called Floribunda, and it's basically celebrating Florida's unique biodiversity. We've always wanted to have an art show, so this year we finally have the right people to do that, and we're partnering up with Crystal Floyd of Cork Arts District. Basically we just want to raise awareness to Florida's native flora, how fragile the ecosystems are. So we're really excited to have the art show.
And so your background is in botany as well as art, or kind of how do you marry those two interests?
Well, so where I first got started, I had a really cool science teacher who introduced me to local ecosystems and native plants and orchids. And that's where my interest kind of began. And
was that here in Florida?
Yeah, Central Florida is where I grew up.
Okay.
And so I actually had another interest in art as well. So I actually got a fine arts degree when I moved up to Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. And how would you say that teacher inspired your love of native plants or plants in general?
Well, we had a kind of a special like high school where classes were set up for different topics. So it was environmental sciences where kind of like where our lead topics were. So we did a lot of classroom projects where we were surveying plants, specifically seagrass beds in the Indian River Lagoon. Mm-hmm. That was really fun. We also did some projects where we got to start some conservation areas where we were helping making the trails more accessible, cleaning up the trash, making informational kiosks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And seagrass beds in the Indian River Lagoon are actually in a tough place right now, right? That's where a lot of manatees have not been able to get the food that they need. And so there's been a big focus on that. What do you think the value is of people knowing the story of native plants and kind of how they fit into Florida's ecosystem?
Well, there's a lot of benefits for plants in general. Number one, they make our oxygen. That's a really important thing. More benefits for native plants are with the wildlife value for that. So having native plants, that you're creating a food source for wildlife and shelter for them as well. They're great for conservation of water. So if you have native plants in your landscape, these plants have evolved in our area, and all they need is the rain from the seasonal rain, and they're used to the droughts as well. So once you get your plants started and established, they're not going to need any more supplemental water. So you're not going to need to spend any money on irrigation, which will save you money, of course, and water conservation on the long run. They're also great for water quality as well. That's another big issue as far as the seagrass beds. And so Florida is predominantly has deep sandy soils. And so that rain naturally would trickle and get filtered down into the soil, and that goes directly to the aquifer. And if you pave all that over, all that water gets washed off quickly off of the asphalt, where it has petrochemicals and excessive nutrients, gets washed off directly into the St. John's River. And that's another element of why we have such these heavy green algae blooms in the water.
The native plants are changing a little bit as the climate changes. I know one thing that's been studied is the migration of mangroves,
which is
moving north. Mm-hmm. And then I was just talking with my producer, Stacy, about sea grapes, which are a plant with these big, flat, kind of papery looking leaves that I never even saw when I first moved here in the 90s. And they're everywhere now. They are just kind of taking over landscaping around the area. And so they're not native, but they're not common to this area.
They're native to Florida, but not northeast Florida, correct? Same with the red mangroves as well. So as things are heating up and water levels are rising, we're starting to already see a push for a lot of these central and south Florida plants moving up. And the red mangrove is directly probably from climate change, but the sea grapes, that is actually in the nursery trade as well. So I'm starting to see those more in sold in like big box stores.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that native plants are important for is, I guess, making sure that invasives don't displace them, right? That they are there and there's not a place for invasives to take root.
Right. And so Florida has over 4,000 plant species growing in Florida. Over 1,500 of those are non-native plants that have naturalized in Florida. A good quarter of those are considered invasive plant species. And what happens with these plant species, they have no natural pests or predators here like they would in their natural environments. So when they come to Florida, it's kind of a free-for-all. They get to grow really fast, and that's how they push out more beneficial native plants that provide food for wildlife and shelter. So we do a lot of our work for the ICSEA chapter and the Florida Native Plant Society, doing a lot of invasive plant removals.
So talk about the art exhibit, when, where. I know you said it's at the Cork Art Gallery, mm-hmm. but tell us a little bit about who's participating and what people will see.
Awesome. So, you know, I love plants, but we're leaving it, you know, it doesn't have to be just plant-centric. So you can, you know, if you're a painter or artist, you can do any kind of art form for Florida's natural flora or fauna. But we have, it's an open call to any artist in Florida. The deadline is March 22nd. So if you're an artist and you want to get involved with the art show, the deadline is approaching pretty soon. We also have a lot of big name artists that are involved. Jim Draper is one of them, and Kathy Starks, just to name a few.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of submissions from the public, and there's a lot of big names that have already confirmed the art show. So we're pretty excited about that. So.
And your work will also be on display?
No, my artwork will not be on display. I actually did the poster.
Okay.
And on all the graphics for that.
And is there a plant sale component of this too?
Yes. So our chapter, the ICSEA chapter, we are having our 9th annual native plant sale. It's one of our biggest events that we do. It's from 9 to 3 o'clock at Native Park. And if you want plants, you got to come early. I mean, we sell out of plants really fast. And the first hour is a bit chaotic. And we have a lot of great plants. We make a huge effort to kind of make a wide variety available to people. And the majority of that is from our members that grow all these plants. And we all have many nurseries in our yard. We will have a few other plant vendors as well. The most popular items are going to be the native milkweeds, which are a great host plant for the monarch butterfly. So we sell out of those really fast.
Excellent. And Floribunda, the deadline to submit, you said, is the 22nd. When's the actual exhibit?
The actual exhibit for Floribunda is April 27th.
All right. Terrific. Well, Adam Arundel, thank you so much for being here and talking plants and art.
Thank you so much.
All right. We'll be back in just a minute.
Covering Florida, providing confidential assistance for all Floridians looking to explore healthcare coverage options within the federal health insurance marketplace. Help is available at 877-813-9115 or online at coveringflorida.org.
The Times Union Local IQ says, ready to grow your business? With the Learning Hub, you'll learn how local marketing can help your business reach the right audience. No tests or software required. LocalIQ.com/lab for more info.
Voters are often pressured to choose one of the front runners for fear of wasting the vote. We need a system where voters can vote for their honest first choice without spoiling the race.
That's where ranked choice voting could come in. Alaska and Maine already use the system in presidential primaries, and four other states might join them. Could ranked choice voting take some of the poison out of politics? That's on the next On Point.
Today at 11, here on WJCT News 89.9.
A new data analysis shows that reported hate crimes against LGBTQ youth in schools have gone up significantly across the country. What do the data tell us about the school environment for these students, and how can adults in their lives support them? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
You count on WJCT News 89.9 for perspective, connection, inspiration, and analysis in a complex world. You count on WJCT News 89.9 to combat disinformation, cancel out the noise, and put the important points in focus. And WJCT News 89.9 counts on you for the funding that makes it all possible. Please add your voice and do your part to secure the critical funding we need to keep you informed. Please call 904-353-9528.
And we're back. It's just a few hours until the official start of spring, and today also marks the official start and end of our spring pledge drive. I'm joined now by my producer and good pal, Stacey Bennett. Good morning, Stace.
Hey, Ann.
Good to have you on the mic, and WJCT reporter Stephen Ponson. Stephen, welcome. Is there a reason that this pledge drive is only one day?
So, yeah, it was kind of interesting that I was talking with our CEO of WJCT Public Media, David McGowan, earlier in the day. And he was telling us that, you know, we have this one pledge drive, we have one shot, it's very important, and this one day we've got a very special opportunity for donations to be matched dollar for dollar. So basically what that means is that if you're able to give just a little bit, $5, $10, that's going to double to $10, $20, so on and so forth. But if you really want to get, if you really want to support us here at WJCT News 89.9, help us out by donating, let's say, $100. That turns into $200 and so on and so forth. So it's a very, very cool opportunity today because it is our one-day pledge drive that, you know, is very important to what we're able to do with helping to produce this show, First Coast Connect, and all of the other great programming that we bring you here at WJCT News 89.9.
And I know that our listeners may have already committed to memory mm-hmm. that number, but if you haven't called already, it's 904-353-9528. You can also go to the website wjct.org/radio. And we, of course, thank you in advance for your generosity. This is a big day with a dollar-for-dollar match. Stacey, in addition to being a great producer and person, you're also a singer-songwriter. Your band, Folk is People, has played before at the WJCT Soundstage. And having that performance space is really just one of the ways that WJCT connects with and serves the local community.
Right. It's a beautiful space. It's home not just to performances or concerts, but we have Lunch and Learn, and all kinds of other events designed to engage and educate. And that's what we also aim to do here on First Coast Connect. Every day we welcome guests on topics ranging from little known history to environmental challenges to arts and cultures. And most importantly, this isn't just our show, this is the community show. We want the community to be part of the dialogue. And so we take calls and comments. And there have been times where we've had people from the community email us and pitch segments, and we've booked those segments. So it's very cool to be
part of. It is an open dialogue, Stephen. And I know that the work that you guys do in the newsroom every day and on the radio is, you know, supported by those donations. So it's really dependent on people, you know, recognizing the work that you do so well and finding, you know, something to support it with. And that's why this pledge drive, brief though it is really an important moment for people to, you know, take a second, make that call or go on the website and make a donation.
Yeah, you bet. Now, with the support that everyone is able to give us, it really helps us to, you know, put out a good product, cover topics that people care about, healthcare, education, what's going on in city government, important discussions that you may not necessarily find anywhere else. I know that earlier today you had on Matt Carlucci, Councilman Carlucci, and Juanita Dixon from the Jacksonville Ethics Commission, and it brought forward a very, very, very important topic and a very important bill that's been going through the Florida legislature and now is up to the governor. And those are the types of topics that we cover in the newsroom. You guys do a great job here on First Coast Connect. We're also doing that same great job in the newsroom, trying to bring you those stories throughout the day and everything that goes along with it. So that's why, you know, having the listener support and having listeners become a sustainer is very, very important, not only for First Coast Connect, but also for the newsroom to bring the stories to life that really impact people's lives.
And people can not only make a donation today, they can also up their sustainer donation if mm-hmm. they want to increase that. Every little bit helps. And really, that show of support is almost as important as the money itself, which is why we ask, if you haven't already, give a call to 904-353-9528. That's the other one, isn't it?
That's the other one.
That's
if you want to call us.
Oh, that's if you want to call the show. Sorry about that. You can also go on to WJCT.org and donate. Stacey, the number of people that we've had on this show, I mean, I know you can vouch for it. You book the show, so you know how many people we have coming through. But we really have made a concerted effort to get as many views as we can, a great diversity of viewpoints, and you know, invite the community to be a part of this conversation that we're having every day.
That's correct. Our goal here is to produce deeply reported segments, and I think we're meeting that challenge, especially having you as a host. We've really upped our game, having a journalist with over 30 years of experience who is so deeply connected to the community and has so much institutional knowledge about Jacksonville. I learn something every day, and that's one of the things that keeps me engaged. But another thing I want to talk about is just the topics we cover in general. Compared to other outlets, I'd say we don't shy away from difficult or uncomfortable topics here. We've covered the Stop Woke Bill, the politics of embryo preservation, efforts by survivors to bridge the divide between Israelis and Palestinians that happened last week. And it just makes me proud to work here.
Well, we're glad to work all of us together. It's a really great team. And so please, if you can, give a call, 904-353-9528. Or go to WJCT.org/radio. You've been listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.